So Aurora relapsed and disappeared. Didn't know where she was. Ended up finding her on Backpage. The FBI got involved, said that she was, because she was under 18, she was 16, that it's considered a federal crime for trafficking a minor. And they have a whole task force of people who are super pissed off and good with computers. And they go and try and track down this kid. And usually they do fairly well for themselves, I guess, but they don't really advertise success rates.
We're on a mission to explore how emerging technologies, media, robotics, and data and behavioral science will solve humanity's most pressing challenges. From education, mobility, energy, food and water supplies, the environment, employment, all the way to disease and basic human rights. Nothing is off limits. This episode is brought to you by Beverage Universe. They have every flavor to help you stay young, beautiful, and thirsty. Go to beverageuniverse.com for your next flavor experience. I am excited to introduce today our guest, Brian Seeley. He is a cybersecurity expert, former U.S. Marine, ethical hacker, keynote speaker, on-air contributor to CNBC, Fox, NBC, ABC, and affiliates, the Dr. Oz Show, TMZ, and other major media publications and channels. He also has done a TEDx talk, Wiretapping the Secret Service. You guys should check it out. And he also has a book on Amazon, Cyber Fraud, The Web of Lies, How a U.S. Marine Risks Life in Prison to Expose a Cyber Crime that Consumers Know Nothing About. Thank you, Brian, so much for being with us today and for giving us your time.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So what do you think is happening right now with this whole Wayfair controversy? What are they really doing? Is it a hoax? Is it people just bringing attention to the situation, or is it actual pass through for trafficking?
Oh, yeah, there's no way that this happened. The IRS is already, they're on top of getting their own revenue enough to where they like look at it, what's in trucks. And these, it just wouldn't work. I know that a lot of the child trafficking stuff shifted from airlines to private transportation because airlines is the most economical way of doing it. But the second people start turning into social justice warriors and being like, that little girl looks like she's in trouble. I'm white. I'm going to go save the day and like interject myself into their life, whether they should be there or not. I agree. Trying to save a kid from human trafficking, definitely a way to go. It's also a way to traumatize a kid who's dropped their ice cream and they're from a different country. So you have no idea what the facial cues are. So it's, maybe you don't know, maybe butt out, maybe mind your business. But that's not the American way.
So how would it work if, like based on your research, you know, domestically or locally, you explained how it happens. How does it happen internationally? Like, for example, right now it just seems like an interesting situation where COVID-19 is occurring. You know, a lot of flights are somewhat empty. We don't have as many people out there, so a trafficker cannot necessarily be kind of lost in the sauce of, you know, lots of people, and they can blend in. They would stick out pretty significantly on a plane, especially if they have a drug child.
Or they're covered in sauce.
So how would you explain to our audience, like, what would be a, you know, how does it work? Or how did it work and how does it work?
Well, it used to work like they put bunches of people on boats. And that's how we got the whole slavery issue everywhere. It's everywhere. Like, it wasn't just African Americans, but yes, they had a huge result of that. But boats shipped stuff. People like African Americans, there was a 3/5 law for a really long time that basically value an African American's life as the same as a piece of cattle. No different. So then they got bred. Like, people were traded to other, like, it was farming people. And it's really, really horrible. But when put in a position of seeking only money and power, and you're already like, huh, so what? Like, she likes it. Like, it turns into two, it turns into five. Like, you become this monster without having to take that first step, which is like, murder your whole family. It's not. It's something subtle. It's something alluring. It's something like, one little compromise here, one little compromise there. If you're on the right path and you're doing what you know is supposed to be the right thing, chances are it's one of those work now, get paid later sort of deals. And it doesn't feel bad when you're doing it. I mean, if it doesn't feel bad, like, that's a pretty good indicator. But I spent years not really knowing what felt good or bad. You could kill that part of you, or at least suppress it for a while.
So what you're saying is that if people incrementally compromise on their values, even by 0.5% over time, you end up being a completely different person than where you started out, because you just did not uphold your standard of, or, you know, any standard of what a good human being is, and you can very easily slip into this type of behavior. But I can totally see that, because it happens with just about anything in life.
Albert Einstein: compound interest is the eighth wonder of the world. He who understands it earns it, and he who doesn't pays it. It's the same exponential compound growth curve in one little thing here, steal a candy bar there, a little bit when you get a little bit older. It doesn't suddenly just get better. It doesn't, like, you're stealing cars and then you're like, no, I'm going to go for like a deck of cards this time. Like, no, that's no rush. Like, it's always something bigger or more difficult, bigger payoff. You want that endorphins. You want the adrenaline rush. It's the same with cocaine. It's the same with meth. It's the same for heroin. It's the same for gambling. Gambling's an evil one too. If there's a 12-step meeting associated with whatever hobby you think you want to start, don't do it. Don't do it. There's no quilting 12-step program. There's no none of the really good, healthy activities have 12 steps associated with it.
So, I mean, do you think these people are the people that are involved in these types of activities? You're saying that they are addicted to what?
Oh, the people who are running these things are, I mean, I wouldn't say anyone is unsavable, but they know what they're doing is wrong. They don't care. They're way past the point of caring. It's the patrons, or it's the guys at the lowest sort of rungs. Those are the recruits, so on and so forth. And they're the ones who end up moving their way up the ladder. If there was no one to take over, there would be, eventually businesses would die out. But there's always seeming to be people interested in underage girls. Why? It sucks.
Well, yeah, girls, boys, babies for sale. There's just all kinds of really atrocious things happening. What do you make out of the whole Epstein situation? Do you think that Epstein was the head of the operation, or do you think Epstein was potentially working for someone?
I don't think his ego would have allowed him to work for somebody. I mean, we all work. We all answer to people. Like, no one's not. You need your client to pay your invoice, or we all beholden in one way, shape, or form, but he made his whole identity out of, I'm going to wear the weird jacket, or I'm not going to dress like everyone else, or I'm going to leave late, and I'm going to, arrive early, and like, or just not arrive at all. And I'm going to have a plane, and it's going to be eccentric and weird. And I mean, Hugh Hefner did better with the Playboy Mansion. Like, the guy just had no imagination in terms of, like, he could have had a grotto. Or, like, he had a whole private island. It's like, dude, yeah, there's no way he was working for anyone else when he was pretty transparent about everything he was trying to get done. Hey, if you know a friend who's about the same age as you, which is underage, you should bring her. Like, everyone's talking openly when they're all explaining it, like Delane, and based on what's going on in the documentary. So he was getting away with it for so long, he wasn't going to get caught. He thought he was untouchable.
It's mind-blowing that it was happening at such a high level of our, I mean, you know, countries, governments. And
potentially, yeah. Donald Trump standing next to him in a photo is not an indictment of Donald Trump. Neither is it of Joe Biden. Lots and lots of photos of both of them with Jeffrey Epstein isn't good for business. It's still not an indictment. If you want to say, anyone who's ridden on his plane is probably a dirtbag. Like, ah, oh, crap. What about the pilot? Or like, what about, like, I get what people are trying to do, the blanket statement of like, no, anyone who associates with that guy. But what if you served him lunch? Like, you don't, sometimes people don't know. I know I hung out with friends and did drugs and did all sorts of shady crap, and none of them had any idea. Or they knew something was up, but they didn't know really what it was. That's what you do when you do drugs and you do that kind of thing. You lie to cover it up.
So what are you up to now?
So speaking, educating, and I'm working for a company called Scientiv. They are a startup hardware, software. I don't even know how to start explaining them. One of the very first pieces of technology that I've ever been excited about working for, my boss, my direct boss is the CISO. I'm the senior security architect. He worked at, still works at the NSA for 35 years. I'm 37. I wasn't doing much productive stuff when I was two. Like maybe counting or... I got colors down. I got the whole, all the primaries. He's never going to tell me anything good in terms of any government secrets. And I don't want him to. I just want to follow him around on like Christmas and know, okay, no Chipotle. All right, we're not going to walk under. Nope, no Southwest Airlines. Okay, got it. Delta. We're going to get on Delta. Nope, not Delta. Like, I want to just follow him to make sure. I know I'm not like putting my family in a death trap. Oh, wow. He never rides elevators. Something about elevators. That's what I want. He is super awesome. Like, I have a great leadership team. The products are essentially defend your router, desktop, server against hackers in the fact that if they get in, it immediately rolls to a new version of the operating system that does not have the hacker in it. The hacker is still in the old one, playing around, getting stuck, and it'll kick him out. And now you're seamless, continuing on with your work, no hacker.
That's brilliant, actually.
And the very first movie, the very first time I met them, we were in a conference room, and they're like, yeah, if you have a firewall and it gets compromised, it just wipes everything, and like half a second later you're right back up. And I was like, oh, that was like Aladdin where the genie is like, poof, what do you need? Poof, what do you, like, he keeps doing that over and over, and they're like, oh yeah, we got to use that for like the explainer video. And they did.
Yeah, that's a brilliant concept, actually, because the hacker doesn't actually know that he's been hacked back.
Right. And hacking them back ends up, you just end up hacking a church, you end up hacking some other pop. Like, you're firing missiles, and it's an ice cream truck with a bad guy hiding in it. But not really.
Interesting. So tell me of some instances where you have hacked things. I know you've done quite a bit of stuff that's fascinating for our audience.
So the funniest ones that tend to get the most coverage was the TED Talk was after the whole media story about the FBI, the Secret Service, and some of the other funny prank listings. The prank listings.
But wait. Tell me about that.
The FBI and Secret Service? All right.
Yeah.
So was calling Google, telling them they have a problem. I can manipulate listings. I can manipulate data. And they're like, no, you can't. We're Google. You're you. Like, I know what I look like. I got it. But they were dicks and they were kind of arrogant. So I said, I can prove it. So I proved it with Como News. And the night before the whole FBI thing, they got it on tape of me changing the Library of Congress on Google Maps to the Edward Zoolander School of Kids Who Can't Read Good. And it was like the front of the video on their website. It makes me laugh to this day. And there's a bunch of other funny ones that I built right around that time. The next day, I took an ATM in Seattle. I added a phone number to that ATM. Most ATMs don't need phone numbers. But because the business already existed on the map, it didn't require new verification. It didn't require a postcard. It didn't require a phone number. It was like, oh, well, you're just making modifications. No big deal. But you can subtract stuff after you've made more modifications. It's like, okay, you have to have this desk no matter what. And be like, all right, cool. So then, like, I can add another house to it. And they're like, yeah. It boggles the mind how the logic worked. So took the ATM, added a phone number, then changed the address of the ATM to the Secret Service office in D.C., added some Secret Service photos, added their website, and the phone number was a marketing telemarketing call, inbound call number. Calls will be recorded for quality assurance purposes and forward to wherever I choose. How about the switchboard of the Secret Service? And then I flagged the real one as a fake from a whole bunch of different people. Me pretending to be a whole bunch of different people.
Uh-huh.
And they went away. And then all of a sudden, phone calls started coming in. Because I hadn't anticipated that they probably get 3 to 4 calls a minute.
The Secret Service? Huh.
Ended up listening to 2 and having 40. And I had to guess. I was hoping it would have been like a year per call if they wanted to really stick it to you. It's 5. And like math wasn't always my greatest one, but I know that one's going to suck. Like 200 years?
200 years as far as prison is
concerned? I don't eat the right amount of fiber for 200 years.
Mm.
It's just not going to happen. It's not in the cards for me. Let alone would I make it to prison. It would be like end up in the back of a Crown Vic being pushed into the Sound. You're going to feel some pressure.
So then what happened?
I called a few friends, 2 FBI agents who I know from the Marines, and then 2 local cops, because I wasn't going to go to the Secret Service and then be like, hey, here's all the evidence. I brought everything. Wonderful. As you see the movies, you don't know how it's going to work. These guys were great. They weren't mean. I mean, they weren't violent or anything else. I mean, they didn't have senses of humor, but I think that was just a personality problem. So they didn't believe me right away. And I told them, hey, I did all these sort of prank things, and then I actually did this other thing. And they had printouts of the news story from the day before. Like, watch out for this dick. If this guy's an idiot, he's probably going to do something else. And right on cue. But then 15 minutes later, they asked me to leave. They're like, dude, you can take off, man. Like, We'll call you back if we need you. And I'm like, all right. I know getting blown off. Like I've asked plenty of girls out, plenty of getting blown off. I have been married. It's okay. If I can't prove it to you in like a minute, I'll leave. call the DC office of the Secret Service right now. Just call them. The guy pulls out his cell phone. He just does this and puts it up to his ear. And he goes, yeah, hey, this is Brian over in Seattle. The agent's name was Brian, which does not help the story. And we don't hear much. And then he says some more words and then he hangs up. And I got a notification on my phone. So that was the David Blaine, David Copperfield moment where you're hoping the only way it would work is if he used Google to search for Secret Service Washington, D.C., not having the number pre-programmed. It wouldn't have worked. I didn't hack the phone system. I just made him look at the wrong thing. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, call this number for a good time. And like, I can totally screw that up for him. And I played back the message on speaker, and now we all heard it. And what was left of whatever their senses of humor were, they left. And they took all my stuff, and they gave me a piece of paper, and they're like, this form says that you understand your Miranda rights. I'm like, huh, you guys can't even remember these? That's not a good sign. And so they're written down for you. And then they put your hands up on the wall, and then they pat you down, and then they put you in the guest suite with a tiny little chair, handcuff bar, and a table. And then you wait. In my case, it was like 4 hours of explaining and repeatedly showing how I did what I did. And like, okay, you want to see it again? Here's how we do that. All right, can we see it again?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the implications of something like that being done on a mass scale are pretty significant, I would think.
Congressmen, banks, attorneys. And it wasn't fixed like a year after they said it was fixed. So I showed Congressman Ted Lieu and the head of communications at Congress. I think he worked on like Jurassic Park 2. Like, he was like a filmmaker or something. He's a comms guy. So Ted Lieu, we're all on hold. I'm like, okay, you're going to call in to the office and we're going to hear your office line pick up. And they're like, yeah, this is Ted Lieu's office. And okay. He's like, yeah, nothing's weird. I don't understand. So then I'm like, all right, try it again. And I swapped the destinations of what they thought was his office. And then my phone answered and be like, yeah, Ted Lieu's tattoos. And the guy's like, oh no, this is, uh-oh. Like, they put two and two together and still not solved. Google said it was solved. Not solved. It's not an easy problem to solve either, because the verification process is kind of flimsy because we don't enforce it. It's state to state. It's all different. Who validates whether your business is legal? Secretary of State, Department of Labor, the Germans.
Right. No, they're not. There's no centralized database for any of that. No.
Not that I'm proposing more centralized databases, but this is one of those cases where it would be handy to know, hey, that dentist he's no longer licensed. That would be helpful. Or if any of those are even real, you call, like I did an interview with a lady who called the locksmith that she found on Google Maps. He shows up, does all the locks, finds out she's going on vacation. She leaves, she comes back from vacation and her house is empty. And the listing on the maps gone. What do you do at that point? Yeah, I'd like to report crime, a number that doesn't have it. It's nowhere. There's no evidence of it. That sounds like a crazy person. You can't prosecute that.
Right, and that's where all of the social engineering tricks come in, where you could really leverage technology to get people to do certain things. And I don't know. I think that it's just fascinating all the things that are possible to occur at any single instance. If you think about it, you will go crazy legitimately.
Yeah. So, and you have plenty of room to pace around thinking about all that stuff in your house that's been emptied by people. People are getting taken advantage of in many different ways. Just monetarily. Whether it's ransomware, that's, I got to pay ransom. Crap. I don't want to lose all my baby photos that I probably won't ever look at anyways. There's, it's like, ah, you got AIDS. Ah, you got, ah, like everything is like, gotcha. Sucks. Maybe not AIDS, but.
So what would you, I shouldn't be laughing because it's not funny, but you're funny. Liked. So the topic is not funny. But what would you say are some of the most common things that people can defend themselves against?
Update your software every week, every time it asks. It's not annoying. It's necessary. It is an immune, it is a vaccine to protect against something that they discovered in the wild. And now you're getting the opportunity to get that. And you're going, but I'm watching a video. And nope. And then you get infected. And then all your stuff's like encrypted. And it sucks. Usually when ransomware gets, so they develop it and it gets blown out of proportion all over the place, people start disassembling it and figuring out how to beat it and figuring out how to decrypt it without having to pay. So there's constantly a battle between good and evil. If the bystanders and the casualties of war would stop making it worse, it might actually get better. The way that's improved upon is training and public shaming. And no, just training. And so you get more people to understand. If you asked 10 years ago what two-factor authentication was, lots of people would be like, what? I don't understand. But now people understand what that kind of concept is. Even if they don't understand the most basic aspect is authentication is something you have, something you know, and something that you are. Debit card is something you have to prove that you own that account. Something you know is the password that no one can know, but they also would need to have the card that you have. Proving that you are you is like biometric. So there could be points where biometrics will be coming into place in tandem with other forms of authentication because it's going to be too easy to fake stuff. You can fake all the videos now and the voice and the face, and it's totally believable. Arnold Schwarzenegger looks great on everything. But doesn't help for facial recognition or the fact that everyone's wearing a mask.
Right. So that's an interesting one as well, because I guess we shall see what happens with the masks.
Not very well. Those things are really clouding the vision.
I guess the pupil part will still be visible. You can scan your...
wish I was sorry. I'm sorry. But like... I can't help it. The doctor says if he operates, I'll die. So, yeah.
That went over my head.
Your software, training, and then don't download stuff that you didn't set out to go download. Don't go to, like, pirating sites to try and get the new movie that came out or, like, some new software. That's where they put all the viruses. Not... Maybe that's where they're like made and bred and like that's where they're kept. That's the story. Like that's the worst place to go. Go get something free. You go click it, you download it, you leave. Go watch your news, get off the computer. If you didn't seek it out, don't click on it. Don't click on links in your emails. Type it out on a different screen. Figure some other way to do it because that's how they get you. They can make the text look like it's going to the right place. They can make it look like it's going to the right website. And you're like, no way, it says google.com. But there's other ways of manipulating that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so what are some of the, what happens after that once they get in there? Once they've
got your computer, they can have it got for years. They take your credit card numbers. They don't use them the second you renew them. They'll wait a little while. They sell them on the dark web. Oh, right now, like you can go and buy how-to guides to game the unemployment departments all across the United States. And then you can go buy information of people with their social and their birth date and their phone number and their address and their name, plug it all into the website for the Employment Security Department and get their unemployment benefits, even if they're not unemployed. Super handy.
Interesting. Wow.
Otherwise, it's just the $1,200 cash advance that people got. It's their own money that they're just being loaned early.
Right.
This episode is brought to you by Ready Mask. A lot of us are looking to protect the health of our employees and our office guests, as well as ourselves. Ready Mask's new unique and innovative line of comfortable and strapless N95 masks are available on their website. That's readimask.com. Check them out and social distance in style. If you like our discussions and would like to support our efforts, be sure to subscribe on Patreon, Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, or YouTube. If you have an idea about a topic or know someone who would be a great guest, reach out on our website, amplifiedpodcast.com.
I can't wait to dive into some of your background and how you got started. You have a fascinating story. So tell us, how did you become interested in cybersecurity?
I've always had a computer in the house. I was always trying to play more games or do more stuff or break it and find some way to irritate my dad and make him spend more money. But ultimately, it turned into a whatever this is.
So
lifestyle, maybe?
So how did you grow up? Tell me a bit about how, you know, what life was like as a child.
Sure. I was born in Tokyo. My parents at the time were working. My dad was working in sales. My mom was a stay-at-home mom. We moved to the States when I was 2.5, almost 3. Back to Japan when I was 9. Graduated high school at 17 from the Christian Academy in Japan. So a good majority of my upbringing was in Tokyo. So there's subways and there's trains and there's mass transit and no one in high school has a car and cell phones were just starting to come out and be popular. Well, come over here. If you don't land in what I guess maybe New York, if you're not in New York, there's no good public transportation, even though every city is going to get mad at me for saying that. Literally compared to Tokyo, everything's terrible. So you can't really get where you want to go. You don't know where to find jobs. Realizing everything that I know about how to find anything in Japan does not apply here. So it was a bit of a culture shock, which makes it easier to like want to stay inside, especially if going to school in like central Michigan, like way up here. And people quit smoking during the winter because it's too cold to go outside and smoke. That's a good sign that you've moved too far north. Just saying, like, you can't even finish a cigarette, and you're just like, I'm going inside. Nope, that's too much. So that didn't take real well. Ended up partying too much, not being super responsible, joining the Marine Corps, and was a linguist. Went to Monterey, and was there for 2 years, and then spent about 2 years in Iraq with various contractors and military and I worked with the Japanese military for a bit, about 4 or 5 miles from where Abraham, you know, the guy from the Bible or the Quran or the Torah, like all three religions agree on the one thing, like that guy's buried here. Everything else, you can go to hell. But like that guy's dead and he's there. And it's like this big ziggurat and it's on a military base, a U.S. military base called Talil Air Force Base. And I ran into people I knew from Japan there, which was weird, considering it's Iraq and not like Cleveland.
Wow.
Yeah, that's when it all stopped being weird and nothing weird ever happened again.
Yeah. So tell us what happens next, right? So you're born in Japan. You speak Japanese. Move here. So your parents moved back to the United States, or they're originally from the United States, or they were originally from Japan?
No, they're allowed to live in Japan because they've got college degrees. So if you have a college degree, you can get a working visa, almost no questions asked. There, my dad was working for PPG, which is an American company that does paint, glass for auto manufacturers. Huge company. He quit and started becoming, I guess, what you would call a missionary, working at a private Christian school, volunteering at church, same with my mom. So she was teaching art and the librarian for the Christian Academy in Japan, both of whom my parents actually graduated from that school in the 70s. So it's been around for a while. I couldn't stay and work without a college degree. So it's kind of like, you got to leave, come back when you're successful and you can like get a job and be a normal person again. So it's like a test to kind of like stay home. But everything you're going to learn and need over there, you didn't learn over here. Like,
right.
They can't teach you how to balance a checkbook in Japan because they don't have checks. Not like Czech Republic, like, you know.
Yeah, checks, the old-fashioned way of payment. So you come back here to go to school. You join the Marines.
Yep.
And what was that like?
It's really intense. You go in through this boot camp that's designed to, I mean, some of the guys said it wasn't as hard as football practice physically, but mentally, there's a good amount of people who are 5-6 weeks in who haven't gone poop from the very first time you get there. Like, you're so stressed out, you don't know what's going on. So some people break under the stress. Some people get recycled and they put them back further in training and they give them a little chance to recuperate. People break legs. People have stress fractures in their feet. I lost 75 pounds in 94 days.
Wow.
And like normally, I think you need like cocaine if you're in Hollywood to like get that much weight off. But yeah, we were just running with big packs in the sun, in the desert, in the summer, forever. Three quarters of a pound every day of weight lost. And I was eating every day, so.
Wow.
It was bad. Yeah. My parents didn't recognize me. When I was in Japan, as the only white guy getting off the train carrying military sea bags, looking at my parents going, where is he? Like, it couldn't be any more obvious, but I was that skinny. They didn't even know who I was.
Wow. Wow. So then what happens after that, right?
I got fat. It's never been the same since.
So, well, yeah, I mean, if you stop doing all those things and running in the desert with 10 pounds on your back.
It's a nightmare.
So you come out of the Marines, and then what happens?
Oh, I had a bunch of money saved, and I had no idea what to do. Like, I knew drugs were fun, and alcohol was fun. And, like, you don't realize, like, there's, like, levels of drugs, but, like, no one really explains it. It's just based on, like, high schooler's perspective is, if I can get this, then it must be fairly okay. But if I can't get something, that must be because it's special. Like, how many 11th graders have crazy expensive designer drugs? They just don't because they can't afford it. They don't have jobs. Well, when you have tons of money you've been saving up and have nothing to spend it on, it goes pretty quick. And you develop this really, really solid, a good foundation of cocaine and alcohol to just destroy your life. And you end up... So battling addiction was the next chapter. And then this girl got pregnant, as one would have it, you know. So we got clean. We got a place. I got a job. I don't know why I didn't have a job then, but X-Lane seemed like a good idea at the time. My ex-wife identified as gay when I met her, which I would love to pretend that she didn't, because it would have made it easier to explain, because people are like, well, you didn't know when you met her. I'd be like, yeah, I did. Yeah, I did. That was stupid. Like, oh, you, why'd you throw yourself under the bus? Be like, I can't lie to you. I'm not going to lie. Like, I knew that that was the case. But it gets worse.
Well, it does take two to tango, so you're not the only one that should take responsibility for that, I would assume.
Whether she doesn't take responsibility for things is not my business at this point. But, no, she was great. We got clean, we had the kid, we got married in Vegas a couple months later in 2008. We had Piper in September of 2008. And 2012, 2013, we moved up here. Things didn't go well. We both ended up relapsing. We struggled getting clean. I ended up getting clean March 13th, 2013. And don't really know her side of the equation, but won't speak ill of her about it. And during, the kids swap which week they're at which parents. When my daughter was in the bath and my ex came over and we were talking and sitting on the bed watching TV, Piper was playing in the bath happily. And my ex said her back hurt, so I gave her a back rub, and then she was pregnant again. And that was a really fun...
Is that how it works?
Phone call to my parents, and they're like, everybody was like, oh, hey, you know my ex-wife? You know how that divorce didn't go well? And you know how the kid and the custody and the... Yeah, she's pregnant again. And I don't have anything to say for myself. So that was Declan. He was born 12, 13, 14. And both of them, well, one's a daycare and the other one's upstairs.
Well, congratulations.
I have kept them alive. All original parts, no new holes.
That's a good one. That's a good line. I like it. So tell me what happens next after that. You're in Seattle right now, right? A lot going on there.
Yeah, at that point, I was in Tukwila. So I got custody after Declan was born. I was consulting and had given my TED Talk in 2014. He was born at the end of 2014. Fast forward to Declan being almost a year old, getting him and Piper, she was seven. Aurora was my stepdaughter. In the marriage. I hadn't seen her in a while. She's at that point full on drug addiction with IV heroin usage, and it was problematic. So the state ended up putting her into a group home. She asked to come live with me and live with her siblings. And I said yes. That worked for a little while. She went to a short rehab, came back. Teenage battle stuff like don't touch the thermostat. Rinse out your dishes, put them in the dishwasher. Don't bring boys over. No shooting up heroin in the house. You know, the standard rules. My mom got sick Thanksgiving Day. Yeah, a little over 3 years ago. She had a headache one day, and then they took her to the Japanese hospital nearby and found a brain tumor. I think that was a little bit hard for Aurora because she was actually really close with my mom and my dad. She liked my parents. She did not like me. And that changed as we lived together without her mom being part of the picture. So Aurora relapsed and disappeared. Didn't know where she was. Ended up finding her on Backpage. The FBI got involved, said that she was, because she was under 18, she was 16, that it's considered a federal crime for trafficking in a minor. And they have a whole task force of people who are super pissed off and good with computers. And they go and try and track down this kid. And usually they do fairly well for themselves, I guess, but they don't really advertise success rates. I wasn't real good with just sort of letting other people go and look for my kid. So I spent a month looking for her. And yeah, it was driving. There's some moments where it was like, this is really a dumb idea, but I'm going to do it anyways. I don't have any choice. Like 3 a.m, walking downtown Seattle in some of the worst areas, walking up to the only people on the street who were not really caring about anybody. And they're like, look at this guy. Like, who is he? What is he doing? Like, have you seen this girl? And they'll be like, oh no, man. Okay. Yeah. No, like, go ask them. Like people have kids. Doesn't matter if they're criminals or they're drug dealers or they're stealing your car. They're like, oh crap. Like, we'll pass out flyers, man. This car will help. So she was gone for a month, ended up tracking her down to a house, just North Seattle, like any other house, using reverse phone searches and addresses. And the babysitter that I had at the time, I had her call the number back, pretending to be one of Aurora's friends, so that the guy who picks up the phone doesn't hear a dude's voice. He hears this babysitter's voice. She's like, yes, we're there. And he's like, okay, hold on 1 second. And she texts me and goes, yep, she's in the house. And I was standing out front at this point, waiting on a buddy of mine, and then we decided to call the police. And two hours or so later, she was taken to Seattle Children's and then to my house for a couple of weeks while they waited for a bed date at a really long rehab. And I flew my ex-mother-in-law up from California to help supervise. And I promptly fell apart. Wow. Like, I remember the night. But my friend who I still see to this day doesn't really, he's like, yeah, you weren't really there. Like, it was just complete autopilot. But that's when the autopilot kind of ended.
I couldn't even imagine. I mean, you know, going through something like that. So how did you end up finding her? Because I know it's quite a complicated process of, you know, reverse engineering the steps that she took. And I guess with, you know, there's a lot of talk about human trafficking going on right now that I think most people don't really understand exactly the consequences of the people that go missing and how the whole thing works. And
so with her situation, it was it was either a guy who just had a bunch of money or whatever the circumstances were. It wasn't into an organization that has a mechanism that's just like, all right, put it on the truck, send it off, put it on the truck, send it off. It was a local, I mean, there's greed and there's people willing to buy underage girls locally, everywhere. Every local has it. So, I mean, that's kind of depressing. She started off being advertised on Backpage, so all of her photos had different phone numbers or different bits of text. So like 5'3", blonde, 185 pounds, space, comma. And you can take that string and then copy it and figure out, okay, this isn't even her. It's some other dude advertising this other girl with the exact same text. So is somebody lazy and copying, or is somebody managing all these accounts in this area? Manage 20 girls, and then all you're doing is copying and pasting on the internet. That's how they do it. So,
wow.
Yeah, copy and paste gets a lot of usage.
So Backpage
was. They got shut down during that time period, actually.
So somebody could actually go on a website and sell a human being?
And buy one, yeah. Or rent.
Wow.
Yeah, it's really awful.
Right. So that's getting quite a bit of attention now, where I guess they're hijacking other marketplaces and doing similar things. I mean, I don't know how much relevance there is behind the whole Wayfair Amazon thing.
I want to be able to help those types of things, but I feel like if you get burned by a certain kind of poison, you like built, like you can tolerate it. And then the second time it's like when it really gets you, it is something to that effect where if I don't, if I'm not careful, that world, it's really toxic and it's very hard to pull yourself out of mentally from some of the, from how awful it is. Like if you think about it for too long, yeah, people kill themselves because of the stuff they've seen, not even done. The photographer who took the photo of the vulture behind the little starving African child who's covered in flies and he's almost dead because he's starving. And there's people walking around. And he takes a photo of the vulture waiting. He went home and he killed himself within the year. Like, how do you, like, that level of, like, human indifference from everybody involved? Like, it's a different, it's like a snake, and the photographer's like, wow, you're an idiot. But, like, this kid's dying of something totally preventable, and there's thousands of them. Just no one gives a shit. Pardon my French. Like, that does not compute for me. My daughter, my oldest non-biological kid, I found out to me that she was my own biological kid, but I cared about her just as much as my other ones, and sometimes more because that one doesn't shut up. I cared about her that much when she went missing, not at Christmas, not on Thanksgiving, when she went missing. That's the rub. That's when you don't take your shoes off. You call the babysitter. It's 11 o'clock at night, and you go out and you find your kid until you find her, you fall down. Love it.
So it's just for people that don't necessarily understand how it works. So if your child or a minor or your neighbor or any child that goes missing potentially can be found being advertised somewhere online for someone to purchase through some type of a code or some type of a crypto message that the purchaser would understand that maybe regular population may not be able to understand. And then how does that transaction then occur? So let's say, for example, if you had posed as a buyer, what would you have had to do in order to get in touch with the seller?
Call a phone number. And then he would tell me where to go if it was, if she was at a hotel or if she was traveling, like mobile. But usually the ones that are in hotels not moving are the ones that are doped up really, really badly. And the ones that are doped up really badly are doing lots of dope because they need to not know what the hell's going on or forget it because it's horrible. You don't, like, if someone's doing fine, you don't just see, like, the happiest librarian in the world shooting heroin. She's fine. She's having a great day. All the books are organized. It's sunny. But, like, if you're having the worst day of your life every day, yeah, drugs are kind of the perfect solution. That's why they were invented in the first place. Painkillers. You don't want to be awake for that shit. You just don't.
So you find her. She comes out. She goes into rehab.
Yeah, she went into rehab by end of February, beginning of March.
And then what happens next?
I had recurring nightmares of, I like the movie Being John Malkovich, where you're looking, you're in someone else's head, looking out through their eyes, like, oh, like, and this person is on their way to go and pay for having sex with my kid. And no matter where the thing stops, and I waked up, looking around, go back to sleep, and it resumes, and it's not fair. Like every other dream ever, every good one, flying, the beautiful girlfriend, whatever, girlfriend, all, you know, all these fantasies, nothing. No repeats, no continuations, do not pass go. This one, where I get to rape and over and over and over my own kid, had to have something to do with guilt or the amount of porn that I had to look through to find her every day. Just sitting around staring at the same stuff, it'll warp your brain one way or the other. And I couldn't hold a job. I ended up getting hired at a company and fired 3 days later for sleeping. Because I slept for like 72 hours in a row. And I got no call, no show. I still don't think I ever got my stuff from my first day at work there. I don't even know that's there.
Brian.
It was close. I mean, it was an amazing salary. I needed it. I ran out of money. I did not have any food to feed my children the next day. So I tucked them into bed and said goodbye, and I attempted suicide. But it did not. Didn't take.
So I'm they glad were to hear that it did not take.
Me too. I wasn't for a while. Like, it was... There was definitely an annoying point. But let's see. So 2 days later, I wake up. Lethal dose of Xanax, not so lethal. And kids are going away with social worker to voluntary foster care. And they didn't. They were so happy to be getting out of the house because I had been so depressed. We hadn't done anything. Like, it was just sitting around the house doing nothing. They were so happy to be leaving, they didn't say goodbye. And my son was like, oh, he's like one or two. Oh, it was heartbreaking. Like, stupid backpack, like, just almost as big as he is, just tearing out of the house. And all I wanted to do was see him one last time. But then I'm realizing, you did see them here one last time, idiot. You said goodbye. Like, you were supposed to be done. Like, that was it. So you don't even deserve that. They're going to go live their lives. And so I started punishing the hell out of myself or continuing. I had to change the music I listened to. I had to change quite a bit. But I ended up going to the psych ward at the VA August, I'm going to say 11th of 3 years ago, 2017. And stayed there a week. Had my birthday, August 14th, at psych ward. I got a phone call from my dad, which was cool. Like, sitting on a payphone talking to him for a while. And I basically slept for 4 days straight and then slept and cried for the last two or three. And then started getting into trouble because I figured out how some of the door latches work and I could reverse some of the door latches by poking the right button and all of a sudden inward was outward, and then they had to call a guy.
The benefits of being a hacker?
I just said I was probably safer asleep. Like, y'all could just... No one listens to me. So I got out a week later. I found a church. Absolutely just distraught. I was going through a series of breakups. Kind of funny when you say it that way. A series of breakups with the same person.
So that,
like,
happens a lot.
It happened like it was a sport or a hobby, or it was like on the calendar. Like, lasagna, and you're a dick. Get out. Like, it just didn't make any sense. Like, you shoot first, ask questions later. Like, you can't break up with me and then ask me to explain something. Like, I don't know. Get out. Like, you reverse that, I'll explain it, and then you don't have to break up with me, but you don't care because get out. So we didn't, it was unhealthy, but my mom liked her.
This is a different girl, right?
Yeah, not the lesbian. This is fiance. That's where I go. So church, got baptized October 22nd, got my kids back before November 4th, I think was the deadline. Here's a funny story. So the first time I had ever prayed in my entire life, thinking that it was the only thing left to do, and I was that desperate and actually wanted something that much, was to find Aurora. It was the night I found her. 2 hours before I found her, I was on a street here in Seattle called 99, but it's also known as Aurora Avenue. It's unfortunate because there's certain colloquialisms you can't say, like going down on Aurora. And so now that's why we have to say 99. I prayed in my car at, I want to say, 11 p.m. And turns out the place that happened was the entrance to the cemetery where my mom was then buried late years later. So the day I need a miracle is I'm negative $347 in my bank account. I got a call to go downtown to go on CNBC. Woo-hoo. Famous. Woo. You get to go show up on CNBC and you go to this little fancy little studio and they've got you live via satellite. It's not as cool as it sounds. It's just a guy with a computer and then another camera. And then you just sit there and there's no one there. And you talk to these people with a little bit of delay, which is just mind-boggling. And I'm negative $347 in my account. I won't be able to get out of the parking garage. They don't have an attendant. And you have to have money on your card to get out. I worked as an advisor to John McAfee and the president of the board saw me on CNBC mentioning something about one of John's products or projects, forgot that it didn't wire me money, and he had wired me $4,000 while I was sitting waiting for, I think it was like Mike Pence or somebody was delaying the next segment with some other thing. Well, turns out I also needed to get a cashier's check for rent. And I had 15 minutes to spare or they would have evicted me, which meant no new apartment, which would have meant no getting your kids back because no safe place, no kids. So it was like down to the wire. And how did it get solved? With a wire. My life is full of this stuff and it's getting a little like some of my friends are like, dude, it's going to work out. It always works out for you. You'll get hit in the head with a meteor that's full of gold and then just go about your way.
It's comforting, right? At some point to realize that,
I make people feel better about their own lives.
I say that all the time, actually. You stole my line. But it is comforting to know that, as bad as it could get, there's always a path forward.
Dude, light something on fire. You could always make it worse. You just start wherever you are, just light it on fire. Is that not worse? What did you learn?
Exactly. I think a lot of people need to hear that. But I do agree with you that for me personally, going down this whole human trafficking path and following that on the news has really been extremely distressing, and it has really kind of altered my perception of what I thought was reality and what actually is potentially maybe happening. So I cannot imagine going through an actual situation like that and having to go through what you went through. I think it would mess anyone's mind up. I mean, how do you unsee or unremember those things and what actually goes on in this scenario?
I had that same thought. First day in the VA psych ward, they got all the doctors and like your care team, all Avengers assemble, except for you're in a stupid gown with no back and your butt sticking out, but whatever. So I'm walking in early and one of the ladies has her back to me. She's reading the file and she goes, "Oh my God, how would you recover from something like this? Like, of course he killed himself. Like, of course." And I'm like, "Yeah, I know." Like, so we all agree it was the right move. Obviously, I needed to work on follow through. I'll talk to my therapist about it. But what can we do now? Like, you didn't give me shoelaces. There are no belts, but my sense of humor is still on point.
Not funny, but
they did not find it funny, except one guy. And then he got in trouble for finding it funny. I feel like he got set up.
So, Ryan, how can people find you?
Twitter, Brian the Maps Guy, B-R-Y-A-N. LinkedIn is a good place. Twitter's... sometimes it gets a little over-political and people get all shouty. Facebook, but usually LinkedIn for professional stuff. BrianSeely.com, B-R-Y-A-N-S-E-E-L-Y.com has my phone number. LinkedIn has my phone number. People find it all the time. And sometimes the people are not people I would have thought knew how to operate a phone. So it's usually, I've made myself pretty easy to find. I like to help people when I can. I'm not going to hack your husband's phone, or I'm not going to hack your wife's phone because you think they're cheating. Let me save you some time. If you think they are, and that's where the marriage is, get counseling. If that's not going to help, get out. You're never going to build trust again, and you shouldn't go after their phone. Asking me to do so is a crime.
Well, good golly. Thank you for telling me that.
I am not going to snoop through your husband or wife's phone. Whether we've talked about this.
Oh, so thank you. I really enjoyed our conversation and our time. I think that you are absolutely fantastic, and
thank you.
Give a lot of people hope, and you've gone through so much that it's inspiring.
Thank you.
I hope you do a lot of TEDx talks, and
I'm hoping to submit one for actual TED, kind of about the whole
book. Yeah,
and work on a book. I think it might be worthwhile.
I think so too. So thank you. I really appreciate it. And we'll talk to you soon.
Absolutely. I would be happy to come back anytime when you run out of actual people with interesting stuff to talk about.
The production of the Amplified podcast has been brought to you by Social Fix Media. Social Fix is a transformational growth hacker agency focused on emerging technology platforms, video and podcast production, content marketing, and overall startup strategy. Social Fix has helped over 300 clients generate millions of dollars in revenue, fundraising, and profit. If you'd like help launching or growing your business, visit socialfix.com. If you like our discussions and would like to support our efforts, be sure to subscribe on Patreon, Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, or YouTube. If you have an idea about a topic or know someone who would be a great guest, reach out on our website, amplifiedpodcast.com. If you enjoy this topic, make sure to tune in next week. You don't want to miss it.